Welcome to Tune 2 Yesterday, bringing you programs from radio's past. I'm your host, Mark LeBeaulieu, for this hour of sci-fi. Coming up in a while, X-1 with a story, Chain of Command. But right now, it's suspense with a report from a dead planet, a July 10th, 1960 broadcast first heard on CBS.
Another tale well calculated to keep you in suspense. Report from a dead planet. Written for Suspense by George Bamber.
Oh, Dr. Siddons, what are you doing here?
Oh, I might well ask you the same thing.
Well, I couldn't sleep. I'd close my eyes and then I'd think, Jeffrey's old man, tomorrow you make history. One of the first men to set foot on an inhabitable planet. And then the next thing I'd know, my eyes would pop open and I'd be staring up in the darkness.
So you came up here to have another look at it, huh?
How did you know?
I'm afraid buck fever isn't restricted to the young.
Oh, gosh. It's beautiful, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Just look at it. How it hangs out there in space. Motionless, like a huge ball or a giant pearl. Kind of luminescent, gray. It's rich against the blackness of space, light of the stars. Red, green, against yellow, black.
Look here on the radar. The land masses show up quite clearly now through the cloud layer.
But, Doctor, it's almost water.
Mm-hmm. More than three-quarters of X-37J surface is covered with water.
Well, do you think the land will be firm enough to set down on?
As dry as the land at home.
Attention! At ease.
Dr. Siddons, I was just going to send for you.
What's up?
I don't know. I just got a report from the con that the Van Allen belt for this planet is about 50 times more intense than they anticipated.
Oh, well, here, let's see.
Yes, I see. The radiation's about 50 times above normal. The ship okay?
Oh, yes. Our hull is designed to withstand 100 times that. What do you make of it?
Well, I don't know. It's not normal for this large a concentration of radiation to be in the magnetic field around the planet.
You mean somebody would have had to put it there?
Oh, well, I didn't say that.
But it is possible that it was put there to act as a barrier to incoming rocket ships, right?
Yes, it is possible.
Well, then that means there's life here.
No, not necessarily. Of course, we know this planet is capable of supporting life. That's why we're going to explore it. But to jump to the conclusion that it is intelligent life and hostile to our exploration is not only unscientific, it's completely unfounded at this point. But maybe that the intense presence of radiation in the Van Allen belt of this planet might be due to natural causes, ones we hadn't anticipated. But whether there are people down there, such as ourselves, is something we can't possibly say until we've landed.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to sensitize the ship's defense system and post orders for the landing party to carry their weapons.
Yes, it's a wise precaution.
Now, in the meantime, it's 5 hours till touchdown. I suggest you gentlemen get some sleep while you can. I have a feeling you're going to need it once we land.
...150,000 feet from touchdown. Rate of fall, 0660.
Well, so far, so good.
145 from touchdown. Rate of fall...
If they had any anti-rocket devices, they would have sent them up by now. We're well into their atmosphere.
Yes, unless they're planning some kind of trap, letting us land so they can capture us intact once we're on the ground.
If there's anybody down there. We've been monitoring the radio frequency since last night, and there hasn't been a sound. Whatever life is down there, I'm sure we'll be able to handle.
110,000 feet from touchdown, rate of fall.
I see you're keeping to the edge of the landmass.
Yes. I want you to be able to get your ocean samples without a lot of traveling.
Well, may I suggest you set down where that large river empties into the sea? That way I can take fresh water samples as well.
You see there, on that peninsula?
You think that's big enough?
I make it to be about 2 miles wide. Plenty of room for us.
Jenkins, what's the spectrographic reading for that peninsula?
Solid mineral. Granite-like composition.
It should support us.
Well, it's not a peninsula, sir. It's an island. You see here how the river cuts around it at the north end, cutting it off from the main body of land?
Yes. Well, that makes it all the better. It's small enough, surrounded by water on four sides. Makes it easier to defend if there are hostile people down there.
100,000 feet from touchdown. Rate of fall, 0790.
Collins, set a course for that island.
Aye, aye, sir.
Dr. Siddons.
Yes?
There's something funny about that island. Look, here on the spectrograph.
Well, what is it?
Well, look how the whole thing shows up gray. Solid rock. Except for this patch of green, the only spot on the whole island.
There's nothing unusual about that. It merely indicates vegetation covering the minerals. Grass or trees.
Yes, but why this one spot? And why so perfectly oblong? Look, the sides of it are laid out square as a parade ground.
Yeah, he's right, you know, Doctor. Nature couldn't lay out anything as geometric as that. It has to be man-made.
You don't suppose it's some sort of sacred ground, a place for a religious ceremony?
Well, now, Lieutenant, let's not let superstition run away with our better judgments.
But look, Dr. Siddons, the whole island's cross-hatched into squares, and that green patch is only the only unmarked place on it.
I don't know, sir. Maybe it isn't the best place to land. The island has been definitely marked up by an intelligence of some sort.
80,000 feet from touchdown. Rate of fall.
Oh, we're too far down to blast up again. I can't waste the fuel.
Captain.
Yes?
The altimeter is giving me a hodgepodge of readings for that island. The only level place on it is that green patch of ground.
Maybe we should try to land on either side of the river on the mainland.
Well, that's cross-hatched just as bad as the island is. Now, whatever that patch of ground is, sacred ground or what, we're going to be in the middle of it. Set your sights for the south end of that green, Collins. Man your battle stations, men. We're taking her in.
Well, gentlemen, we made it.
The new world.
Keep your eyes open. You see any movement?
No, sir.
Phew. It looks like we've landed in the middle of a huge graveyard. What are they, Dr. Siddons? Monuments?
No. They're too big for that. No, I imagine they're dwelling places of some sort. See all those little squares they cut in them? They must be windows.
Well, then there's no question that there are creatures on this planet.
No.
Well, then where is everybody?
Yes, that's a very good question.
Well, I would say that they were scared away by the roar and blast of our landing rockets.
And I would say that they evacuated this place when they saw us coming, and that they're waiting for us to get on the ground where they can attack us.
Well, what are we going to do?
The only thing we can do. It's obvious they aren't coming to us. We go to them. All right, suit up. Be ready to leave the ship by 0800. And every man carry his assigned weapon.
Your readings, Doctor?
Yes, sir. It's just as we predicted from home.
though the ground radiation level is a little bit higher than we anticipated. Here, you can see for yourself.
Is that dangerous?
Oh, it's more than safe for us. There's no reason why we can't get out of these suits and walk around the same as at home.
Mm-hmm. Unless there's the presence of a gas we don't know about.
Yes, that's true.
I need a volunteer.
Oh, Captain, I would like to volunteer.
No. No, not you, Dr. Siddons. You're too valuable to the expedition. I can't let you do that.
Well, there's no danger.
You said yourself.
Oh, please, Captain. You were the first person to set foot on this new world. I'd like to be the first to breathe its air.
Well, all right, Doctor. But be careful.
Come on in, boys. The water's fine.
Hey, you hear that, Collins? We got it made.
All right, all right, all right. Knock it off. This is a military reconnaissance, not a picnic. Well, there's life on this planet. But until we make contact with it, it's the enemy. Lieutenant Jefferies.
Yes, sir.
You will take the doctor and two men and reconnoiter to the east as far as the river. I'll go as far as the West River. And when you get through, double back here.
Yes, sir.
There's a million pair of eyes staring back at us. What do you suppose they look like?
I don't know. I haven't any idea.
It's weird. Hunting for creatures and you don't know what they look like.
Yes.
Well, I guess we could lay here forever. Wouldn't do any good. We're going to find him. We're going to have to get him.
Such crude dwellings. They must have lived absolutely one on top of the other.
Any volunteers to go with me?
I'll go with you.
All right. Now, the rest of you stay here. Keep us covered. If anything happens, don't be afraid to shoot into us. Doc. When I give the word, we'll run across the street. And don't stop until we come to that wall. First building, you got it?
Yes, right.
Well, so far so good?
Yes. Just above your head.
Huh?
There's one of the windows, but it's filled with plastic.
I'll see if I can break it.
No, you can't shatter plastic. What? There's nothing but glass. Old-fashioned glass.
Yeah. Hello in there. Anybody home?
Move along the wall.
Right.
There's a doorway up ahead, I think.
Yeah. It's unlocked.
Push it open with your weapon. Carefully.
Hello in there. Anybody home?
Move in cautiously. And keep your eyes open.
Hey, there's one.
Stop, stop! That's an effigy of some sort. See, it isn't living. It's a statue of some kind. See? It's made out of some sort of alloy.
Are you sure?
Yes.
You suppose that's what they look like?
Well, I imagine so. Animals aren't given to making statues of themselves.
Such ugly-looking creatures. We suppose that's its head?
Yes. And you see, these must be the arms, and these are clearly the legs.
Well, look how close together the eyes are placed. And the spindly legs. Ugh. I hope we don't run into one.
I don't think we will.
What do you mean?
Not in this city, at least. Here, look at the gray dust on the floor. It's almost 2 inches thick. Yeah. I noticed the same thing in the street. Now, if there are any of these monstrosities left, they aren't here. This city hasn't been used for a long, long time. Maybe 1,000 years.
Lieutenant Jeffries reporting, sir.
All right, go ahead, Lieutenant.
We've completed the 1,000-mile inland reconnaissance as your instruction, sir.
And you found?
Nothing. No life of any sort.
Not a thing?
Just miles and miles of twisted, stunted vegetation and a couple more of those huge radioactive burns, such as we found 100 miles south and west of here.
Collins, your receivers picked up anything yet?
No, sir. We've been monitoring all frequencies every day since we've been here. Not a sound. Nothing but random radio interference from outer space.
What about the television satellites we sent up?
Well, they've covered the surface of this planet 100 times, sir. Not a sign of movement anywhere.
Huh. Well, Dr. Siddons, what do you make of it?
Well, it would be unethical for me to venture an opinion at this time.
Now, Doctor, come now. You must have some idea. For the past 10 days, you've been doing nothing but nosing around these old ruins. You must have drawn some conclusions.
Well, now, this is only my opinion, mind you. We won't know until all the facts are in. But as we know, this planet was at one time inhabited by living creatures much like ourselves, no matter how repulsive they may appear to us. They were biped, carnivores, and possessed a certain amount of intelligence.
Well, what happened to them?
Well, in order to understand what happened to them, you have to understand the people themselves. Now, as I've said, they were very primitive and very superstitious. True, they had advanced from the Stone Age to the threshold of nuclear energy, but culturally and morally, they hadn't gotten much beyond the Iron Age.
So, then they discovered the tremendous power of nuclear energy, hmm?
Yes, exactly. The very first use they made of it was to blow a couple million of their fellow creatures off the face of the planet.
What savages.
But they didn't destroy everything. The city's still standing.
Well, as far as I can figure out, it didn't hold any military targets.
Then what happened to the people in it?
They were killed off by radiation.
It's still radioactive. Why didn't the radiation kill us off?
Well, because for one thing, it's cooled off considerably since then. And for another thing, we're used to it. They never had a chance.
Hmm. Well, that's it. We have enough to make a report when we get back. Blastoff is at 1,800 hours tonight. Get everything tied down and ready. That's all, gentlemen.
You were able to crack their language, Doctor?
No, I wasn't able to. My computers were. Fortunately, it was a relatively simple task.
Doctor?
Hmm?
What did they call this place?
What, you mean the planet? The civilization?
No. I mean this island, this city, or whatever it was.
Oh, well, of course it was a proper name, so it's meaningless to us, but I can reproduce the sounds as they made them. They called this place New York.
Suspense. You've been listening to Report from a Dead Planet, written for Suspense by George Bamber. Heard in tonight's story were Bill Mason as Lieutenant Jeffries, Les Damon as Dr. Siddons, John Larkin as the captain, and Phil Meader as Collins. Listen again next week when we return with Memorial Bridge by William N. Robeson. Another tale well calculated to keep you in
suspense.
The Kingston Trio next, followed by the latest CBS News and Have Gun Will Travel on CBS Radio.
Suspense on Tuned to Yesterday, a sci-fi story on the series Report from a Dead Planet from July 10th, 1960 on CBS. It's Tuned to Yesterday with an hour of science fiction. I'm your host, Mark Levanier. We move on now to the story Chain of Command on X-1, an episode heard on NBC on November 21st, 1956.
Countdown for blast-off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on a thousand maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, presents X-1. Tonight, Chain of Command by Stephen R.
This is about George. He's a friend of mine. Lives right here at the Brookside Atomic Laboratory with his family. My name is Charlie Boyle, by the way. I'm a security guard here at the lab. Been here now for, 20 years, I guess. Of course, they don't use the lab anymore. Lots of weeds and things and... Well, I stick around. There isn't really any place to go. Oh, well, I'm getting away from it after all. This is about George. Some of it I knew myself. A lot of it he told me after it was over. It began... it began the morning after George's wife lit into him.
I think, George, the least you could do is complain. After all, are you a mouse or a man?
Clara, what's the point of complaining? It'll just start trouble.
We do live at the laboratory. We have some rights.
The best thing we can do is just stay right where we are.
But it's dangerous.
There's nothing dangerous about it, just so long as we know what we're doing.
I'm not thinking about us. I'm thinking about the children.
The children know where they mustn't go.
George, I will not go on like this without a moment's peace of mind. If you had the slightest concern for my welfare or for the children's, you'd really...
All right. I'll go talk to old Charlie, the security guard.
Why not talk directly to the superintendent?
Because of the complications. Now, I promise you I'll explain the situation to Charlie. He knows me. I've talked to him for over a year now.
And he hasn't the slightest influence.
I'll impress the seriousness of the situation on him.
All right, but do it now.
I will.
And be firm.
I'll be as firm as I can.
I was at my desk in the hallway. Place was deserted. I've always worked the night shift, except for my supervisor, Mr. Adams, who was in his office down the hall working late. I remember I was sort of dozing off when I heard George's voice in my ear.
Charles. Charlie. It's me. George.
Oh, yes, George. Yeah, how are you?
Fine. Can I have a chat with you?
Chat away. I got all night.
Good. It's about the trap.
The trap?
The one outside our door.
Oh, that trap.
Clara, my wife, says it's dangerous.
Well, now,
she'd like it removed.
Removed? Oh, no, George. That can't be done.
Regulations?
Regulations.
Suppose you just... removed it without telling anybody.
Oh, they'd fire me, George.
I see. Clara's afraid one of the kids might get hurt.
Oh.
How about taking it up with the supervisor?
Mr. Adams?
Why not?
Well, it never occurred to me.
Why not give it a try?
Oh, I don't know. Mr. Adams doesn't even know you exist.
Maybe it's time he found out.
Well, it might get a bit sticky.
Give it a try.
Well,
come on, Charlie. Be a good fellow. Haven't we been buddies for a long time?
Oh, we've been buddies, all right, but... Well, when it comes to something like
this... Will you try at least? Clara isn't going to let me alone unless something happens.
Okay, George. I'll give it a try. I straightened my tie and I brushed off my uniform real neat and I went into Mr. Adams' office. I could see the light under his door and hear him on the phone, so I knew he was there.
Edgar? Adams up at Brookside Lab. Uh-huh. How are things in Washington? No, nothing serious. Just want to have a fingerprint check on one of our scientists. Uh-huh. Yeah, number 7X4582. That's right. How's the missus? Good. Oh, excuse me a minute, will you? Somebody at the door. Come in. Oh, hello, Charlie.
Mr. Adams.
Edgar, can I call you back? Fine. Yeah, what is it, Charlie?
I'd like a word with you, Mr.
Well, look, Charlie, I'm on the phone to Washington. Is it a security matter?
Oh, in a way, Mr. Adams.
Well?
I don't know how to tell you, really.
Well, just tell me.
Well, sir, there's a mouse named George down in room 412 who doesn't want the trap outside his door.
Well, that's just too... What?
A mouse in room 412. He objects to the trap.
Look, Charlie, I'm busy. Is this a joke or something?
Well, I guess maybe it
is. I mean, I like a good joke as well as the next fella, Charlie, but... Well, I mean, it's late and I got a lot of work to do. Do you mind...
No, Mr. Adams.
Yeah, well, that's fine. You get back to your desk, huh?
Okay, Mr. Adams.
And Charlie,
Yes, sir, yes.
Next time one of the mice complains, tell him to come in here and speak to me himself.
Yes, sir.
Edgar Adams here again. I'm sorry. One of the security guards playing a little joke on me. He came in to say one of the mice here at the lab is complaining about the trap outside his door. You got him down Washington, too, huh? Yeah? What do you do about it? Traps, huh? Yeah. Yeah, it's the only way, I guess. Yeah.
Well, I went back to my desk. George was there, waiting. I could tell by his expression that he knew the answer before he even asked me.
No soap, huh, Charlie?
No soap, George.
I guess I'll have to tell Clara.
Yeah, I'm sorry, George.
What'd he say?
Well, he said if you've got a complaint, see him yourself.
He said that, huh?
Yep. Of course, I didn't know what was going to happen. George didn't tell me till it was all over. I mean, really, really all over. And then it was too late for me to do anything. It turned out, though, that Clara, that's George's wife, told him that if he didn't go talk to Mr. Adams, she'd up and leave him. Yeah, leave him and the kids, too. So him and me, we went.
And nothing negative on his record, eh, Edgar? Well, okay. Yeah, excuse me a minute. Come in. What is it this time?
Excuse me, Mr. Adams. It's that mouse. He wants to talk to you.
I'll call you back, Edgar. Now, look, Charlie, I mean, this is going far enough.
Yes, sir.
What the devil you got in your hand?
Well, this is him, sir. It's the mouse I was telling you about. George. Here, George. This is Mr. Adams, the security supervisor.
How do you do?
Huh?
How do you do?
Ventriloquism, huh, Charlie? Pretty good.
Oh,
It ain't ventriloquism, Mr. Adams. He talks.
Yeah, sure he does. Well, look, now you had your little joke, and I got a lot of work to do.
I'd like a word with you. But, that's remarkable. It really...
Now, look,
George,
you don't...
George, suppose I just leave you here and step outside. And...
That might be best.
Excuse me, Mr.
Adams. No, wait a minute. You can't leave that beast in here.
He won't take much of your time.
But, all in leaving mouse on my desk.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, of course. What?
I said, can you hear me? Some people have trouble.
I'm going out of my mind. It's a hallucination.
No, sir, a mouse.
Listen to... What are you?
A mouse. You know, cheese, rodents, all that sort of thing.
Do you mind if I touch you?
Okay, but take it easy. Careful, don't bend up the whiskers.
You're real.
Sure I'm real. Now, listen, about that trap.
The trap?
My wife is driving me goofy. Get it away from our front door, will you?
Your front door, yes. Yes, of course, I'll... Are you sure you exist?
I could bite you to prove it.
Never mind.
What about it?
What about what?
The trap.
The trap. Yes, of course. Well, I mean, that's a security problem. Look, would you do me a favor?
Depends.
Tell me, how come you talk?
Simple. My ancestors have been around this lab since it was built. We've gotten a lot of gamma radiation. A couple of them were used as an experiment to... test radiation endurance. There were surgical operations, grafts of human brain tissue to mouse brain tissue to check the effects of the rays on human brains and so on. You follow me?
Wait a minute. I remember there were some experiments where human brain tissue was placed in a mouse and then exposed.
That's it. Those mice, the ones that survived, were my great-grandparents.
Holy smokes.
So, what about the trap? I mean, we're nice, peaceful mice. We don't bother anybody. We don't eat much. We mind our own business.
Wait a minute. You say your great-grandparents were the first of this talking line? I mean, not... Are there many of you?
Three generations, Mac. That's a lot of mice.
Tell me, have you talked to anybody besides me?
Well, I talked to Charlie.
No, I mean besides Charlie...
I tried it with a couple of guys. They wouldn't listen.
These others, what do you call them, your relatives? Have they talked to anybody? Tell me.
How should I know? I suppose they've talked to dozens of people.
Where are these people they've talked to?
The mental hospitals are full of them. It's a problem, see? We can talk to kids and, you know, the odd ones. But anybody else, they get scared.
Uh-huh.
So what do I tell Clara about the trap?
Clara?
My wife, Clara.
Oh, well, it's a security problem. I think I'll have to take it up with Washington.
Okay, take it up.
Yeah, I'll dictate a memo first thing in the... No, I won't. They'll think I've flipped.
Okay, I'll tell Clara.
Now, wait a minute. Let me make a phone call. Sooner or later, this thing has got to be dealt with. Edgar, Adams at Brookside. Now, Edgar, old man, we have just encountered a rather unusual security problem here at the plant. Yes. No, nothing like that. Mice. Yes. Talking mice. No, Edgar, it is not a joke. I know we were joking a while ago, but it turns out there are talking mice here. Edgar, listen. Please, Edgar, will you listen? I'll put one of them on the phone. Now, listen, would you... Here, would you just talk, please?
What'll I say?
Just say anything. His name is George.
Hello? This is George. I'm trying to get the authorities to remove the trap from in front of my... What?
Yeah, let me have it, will you? Edgar, listen, I am not kidding, and I have not gone mad. This is on the level. In my office at this moment, there is a mouse who talks. In this top-secret atomic laboratory, there are several hundred such mice, for all I know. Look, Edgar, you don't believe me, and I don't expect you to believe me. No, I don't want a vacation. Good night, Edgar. He doesn't believe me.
We keep running into this all the time.
George, are you really interested in doing something about that trap?
Have you ever met my wife Oh, of course you have.
Wait a minute. I got it. I'm going to call for a top-level security conference at the Pentagon. George, will you come down there with me? Will you? We won't say a word. We'll just appear.
Washington?
First-class accommodations. We'll get you the best suite in town. Do you like cheese?
Do I like cheese? Can you get provolone down there?
Get what?
Provolone.
We'll get it. All the provolone you can eat.
I've never traveled before.
George, you'll love it. You'll love it. Chance to get away from the wife for a while, huh? What do you say, boy? You and me, huh? We'll live it up down there. Look, I know a couple of girls. I seem to recall they had mice in their pantry.
I don't know. I'll have to talk to Clara.
Look, tell her it's the only way to get action on the trap. Make it sound big, you know. You hate to go away from her, but it's for the kids. What do you say, pal, huh?
Okay.
Attaboy. Operator, get me chief of security at the Pentagon. Make it fast. This is an emergency.
I wasn't there, but like I say, George told me all about it after it was over. Seems him and Mr. Adams went down to Washington on a morning plane. George got a little plane sick, but he liked flying pretty good anyway. They checked in at the Statler, then went over to the Pentagon.
Order, gentlemen, order. As a chief, I hereby convene the meeting. It's been called as a Priority A emergency session by Mr. Adams, who, as you know, is security chief at our Brookville Atomic Laboratories. Mr. Adams?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, chief. Now, gentlemen, it may come as a shock to all of you. It did to me. But I've learned that some 1,200 English-speaking individuals have been operating freely within our top-secret laboratories at Brookville without any security clearance whatsoever.
You did say 1,200?
Actually, sir, 1,207.
Who are these people, sir?
Mice, chief.
Mice?
Yes, sir, mice. I have one of them here with me. Somewhere. George.
Here.
Oh, there you are. George, would you just mind stepping to the center of the table?
Right.
Gentlemen, this is George.
How do you do?
This is most remarkable.
George is the result of an experiment conducted some years ago in which bits of human brain tissue were grafted into live mice to test radiation effects.
And there are 1,200 of these inside the lab?
1,207.
Without security clearance?
Without security clearance.
Oh. Well. Sir, Mouse?
Call me George.
George. George, tell me what you know.
My wife wants the trap removed from our front door. She thinks it's dangerous for the children.
Has she been cleared?
Quiet, General.
Well, a major lapse of security.
I'm aware of the lapse, General.
What about the trap?
I refuse to countenance any act that will aid the entrance of more of these spies and saboteurs into the plant.
Who's a spy? I'm a mouse.
Tell me, have you overheard any conferences?
Maybe a few.
Seen any documents?
My kids play in the secret document file. It's the safest place in the lab.
Have you yourself ever seen any papers marked top secret?
Seen them? Heck, I've eaten them.
I believe this calls for some action, gentlemen.
Mr. Adams, if you and this rodent will retire to the next room, I think we'll have a brief caucus.
Yes, sir. George.
Okay.
Yes, sir. See you later, gentlemen.
Listen, what about the provolone?
Never mind.
Well, I think we should try to forget for the moment that these creatures are mice and deal with them as security problems.
Concur.
Now then, the first question is one of loyalty.
I raise a question at this point.
General?
Are these American mice?
Well, I assume that...
Well, but do we know?
You have a point, sir. Perhaps we ought to get immigration in on this.
Immigration? I'd say extermination.
Before we do anything rash, General, I think we ought to learn more about these creatures. Who they are, what their habits are, their loyalties, how much they know.
Suppose this George creature won't tell us.
We'll have to use every trick in the book. Now, I would suggest we first try the velvet glove. The full treatment.
George.
George told me about the velvet glove later. He said he didn't really suspect anything at first, what with all the excitement of being in Washington and so on, but after a while, he got wind of what they were doing.
Room service. This is Mr. Adams in 712. Will you please send up a pound of
provolone.
Provolone, please. Cheese. Cheese. Yes, and some more wine. Yes, fine. Right away, please. They'll have some more right away, George.
Can't get enough of this stuff. Really delicious.
George, have a little more wine.
I don't mind if I do. this is the life, all right.
It's a great town, isn't it, George?
Stupendous.
By the way, George, those documents you mentioned eating, do you remember what they said?
Something about nuclear weapons. Listen, Adam, what about those girls you mentioned, the ones who had mice in their pantry?
Oh, yes.
How about giving them a call?
It was a little late, don't you think?
Oh, the night's just beginning.
All right, George, I'll give him a little call. 6. Yeah, if my memory serves. Hello, Gail. My memory serves. Bob Adams. Hi, just down on a quick business trip. Uh-huh. How are tricks, Gail? No, not a thing. By the way, did you still have mice? Mice. Yeah, but... You exterminated... Oh, I see. Uh-huh. No. I don't think I'll have time this trip. I just wanted to call you up, say hello. Yeah, maybe next trip. Fine, my dear. So long.
What'd she say?
Unfortunately, the superintendent has a cat.
I see. Wiped out?
Wiped out.
That's something I want to take up with my congressman before we leave town.
We'll do that, George. George, have another sip of wine.
You don't mind if I do.
That's it. Now then, George, about those documents.
Oh, you stop about documents. I thought we were in town for a good time.
We are.
Well, round up a couple of mice, man, and let's get with it.
Mice, I'll tell you what, George. You wait here. I'll go out and I'll see what I can do, okay?
Okay, but make it snappy, huh? I'm raring to go.
Next morning, Adams woke George and told him they were scheduled for another conference at the Pentagon.
George, wake up, huh?
Oh, what a head.
Come on, George, we're due at the Pentagon.
Easy, don't talk so loud. Wow. Where did you get those white mice last night?
Over at the National Research Lab.
Ooh. They must have been feeding those girls wheat germ.
All right, come on, George. Come on, you can sober up in the taxi. Come on.
All right, George, we've been beating around the bush long enough. Who are you?
I've told you, I'm a mouse. My name is George. I live in a hole at the Brookville Atomic Laboratory.
We know all that. We want to know who's behind you.
Nobody's behind me. Listen, you guys don't have to be afraid of me. I'm only a mouse.
It's the perfect fifth column. The ultimate weapon.
Do you realize that you and your family are living inside a secret government installation without any security clearance whatsoever?
I'm willing to be investigated.
How do we know you aren't an agent for a foreign power?
How do we know you aren't an agent for a foreign power?
Preposterous.
It'd be the perfect fifth column.
Gentlemen, I will not remain here to be insulted by this creature.
And I will not be insulted by you, sir. Gentlemen, good day.
No, George, wait, come back.
Where is he? He went that way.
Get
him off.
George!
He's going into the wall.
Grab him.
Too late.
He's gone.
Well, men, this is it. We'll have to decide on a course of action. We've got to recapture
him. Look, I think the first thing to do is get a cat.
He's too smart for a cat.
Well, something's got to be done.
Something's got to be done.
After all, these creatures have access to every secret file in the country.
Not to mention eavesdropping on our private lives.
The thing that bothers me is, gentlemen, they multiply in another three generations. There will be some 12 billion talking mice, six times the human population of the Earth.
It's no matter for fooling around. Kill or be killed, gentlemen.
The problem there is how.
We have reason to believe they're concentrated in Brookville. I say evacuate all humans and blow up the plant. Use the H-bomb if necessary.
I'm afraid you're right, General. We must exterminate.
I'll phone Strategic Air Command and alert them. SAC, please. Hello, Bill. This is Ed. Listen, fuel up a couple of big ones. No, nothing serious, but we may want to use them in the near future. Just stand by, that's all.
I'll call Chemical Warfare, get the best information on exterminating rodents. Hello? Hello? That's funny. It's gone dead. Hello? Hello? Something is wrong here. Sounds almost as if the line had been cut. Adams got an alarm for that mouse.
Well, that was only the beginning, of course. Things began to happen pretty fast right after that. You bet your sweet satchel they did.
Well, Adams?
Yeah, I've been talking to Edgar. The FBI has located several hundred field mice, all of them non-talking. No trace of a mouse corresponding to our description of George.
I see.
Team of secret servicemen been combing the Pentagon and the White House. We've got 1,500 traps baited with imported provolone in the Senate chambers alone. So far, no luck.
And what about cats?
The American feline fanciers have volunteered 100 Mausers.
Oh, good, good. Any more telephone wires cut?
I'm afraid so, Chief, yes. He managed to gnaw through the private wire from the president's suite to the Pentagon.
Oh, I see. Well, got it spliced. What about the top secret file on that new chemical warfare agent? Is there any trace of that?
They found the file, but he managed to chew out the key symbols. I'm afraid it's useless.
Well, keep tracking him down.
Yes,
sooner
sir.
Or later, we'll get him.
Sir. Yes, sir. Yes, sir. Only one thing,
well,
sir.
Well, what's that?
I hate to mention it, really.
Well, go on, man.
Well, sir, the damage has appeared in such widespread places recently.
Well, go on.
Well, there must be more than just George. In fact, we're afraid he has reinforcements right here in Washington.
But that's impossible. How?
I don't know how, sir, unless...
Unless what?
Unless... Well, it seems, sir, that there were a couple of female white mice from the National Research Lab.
You mean...
Yes, sir, I'm afraid so, sir.
I guess maybe you know the rest. Within a couple of weeks, every cable, telephone line, power line, and every telegraph line in the United States had been cut. Also the wires on every plane, tank, train, and ship. They'd also destroyed every file in the country. That was only a month ago. Well, you can guess what's happened. Most everybody has left this part of the world. In this whole atomic laboratory, I'm the only human. And I'm not so sure I'll be around much longer. Yes, sir? The only woman. Not that they need a security guard, but, well, I'm just used to being here. I wouldn't know where to go.
Charlie.
Why, George. George, is it you?
That's right, Charlie.
Well, you look awful. Where have you been?
Well, I was down in Washington, Charlie. About the traps, remember?
Oh, yeah. That was before all the trouble started, over 2 months ago. Well, what you been doing all this time?
Well, you know, we've been pretty busy protecting ourselves, cutting the lines and stopping transportation and such.
I figured it was the mice done it, yeah.
Yeah, we didn't like it, but it was them or us, so we did it.
Well, how come you look so terrible, though?
Well, we stopped the trains and the planes, you know, so... Well, I had to walk back. That's one heck of a walk. For a mouse.
Like I said, this is about George.
You have just heard X-1 presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Galaxy Science Fiction Magazine, which this month features Moral Equivalent by Chris Neville, a story which shows why one culture shouldn't mimic another right down to the last little detail.
That last detail may be just that, the final one. Galaxy Magazine, on your newsstand today. Tonight by transcription, X-1 has brought you Chain of Command, a story from the pages of Galaxy written by Stephen R. and adapted for radio by George Lefferts. Featured in the cast were John McGovern, John Gibson, Ann Thomas, Alan Bunce, Wendell Holmes, and Stotz Cotsworth. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Daniel Sutter and is an NBC Radio Network production.
NBC's X-1, the story Chain of Command, heard on November 21st, 1956, first published in 1954 in Galaxy Science Fiction magazine. The story by Stephen R. would be published again in 1955 in Science Fiction Adventures in Mutation from Vanguard Press. And so closes this hour of science fiction on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from the golden age of radio. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVeillonier. Thanks for listening.